welcome to another edition of the International Football Podcast. And well, we've got it all for you this week, from disgruntled fans objecting to arbitration in Asia, to phantom goals knocking out the world's only superpower in CONCACAF, from the world's greatest player putting it on when it matters in CONMEBOL, to the fairy tale of Iceland qualifying for the first ever World Cup. So grab some coffee, put your feet up, and enjoy the next hour as we entertain you with what was a truly amazing International Games Week. My name's Eamon, and I'm here with Tel. Well, Tel, what an amazing Games Week.
It certainly has been. International football at its best, I think. I mean, there's been a lot of criticism about international football coming out of England, but this is what it's all about. We've had everything.
I totally agree. Personally, you know, I think the Premier League is too commercialised, and this is why I love international football. It's just been amazing, the ups and downs this week.
Yeah.
Look, we've got a fair bit to get through. Our Twitter account.
Our Twitter account, yes. We're on Twitter, at intfootball. Podcast. Follow that for all our thoughts and retweets of interesting articles and so on. They've got a Facebook page.
We have, it's the International Football Podcast. So just search for that and like the page. Let's look first at Syria and Australia. So Tel, what did you make of this?
Well, it was an interesting double header. We had the first game not in Syria, of course, but it was in Malacca in Malaysia. Australia went there going into this as favourites, but the Syrians were the epitome of pluckiness, getting through the qualification campaign to just miss out on direct qualification and to fall into the playoffs. And so Australia had everything ahead of them to do to get one over on the Syrians. Went to Malaysia, and I have to say, I thought Australia kind of dominated that game, but with that sort of sterile domination that they have sometimes, where they just can't quite over the line. You know, they had quite a lot of shots on goal. Syria equalised late with a very controversial penalty. I think you probably have a bit to say about that.
I was watching on the internet stream, and it was cutting out, and I noticed the referee is from Iran just a few minutes before the penalty was given. And as soon as I saw that, we talked in the last podcast about how perhaps Iran sort of went easy on Syria in their final group game. But look, let's be honest. It was never a penalty.
No. And it didn't. The defender, was it Dekanek? I can't remember now, but the defender never...
It's Leckie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My favourite Australian player. He never came close to impeding or fouling the Syrian. Penalty was given. It was 1-1. That set us up, though, for the second leg, which is back here in Australia, of course, in Sydney. And maybe a disappointing turnout from the Sydney crowd, but a lot of Syrians in the crowd, which was great to see.
Yeah.
Look, at the end, Australia's sort of greater quality, like there's a couple of moments from Timmy Cahill, who at 37 is, some would think was past it, but you know, he still has that football head.
Well, he is the difference.
Both literally and metaphorically.
I mean, he's always been so cynical.
Yeah, committed to winning is another way of saying it. And he knows what to do to win.
And that's for all our possession. That's the one thing we're not good at when we're dominating, getting the actual goals. Syria took an early lead.
They did. With that, I was astounded at the state of the pitch. As soon as I saw it, I was wondering what was going on, how they had a concert there the night before. It looked terrible. I mean, I was at a pub in here in Melbourne watching on a large screen. It wasn't maybe the highest definition screen, but that pitch looked terrible. And yeah, sure enough, next of all, you see players falling over left, right and centre. Milligan makes a pass, but I'm sure the pitch had something to do with it.
There were players slipping. It was constantly incredible watching it. There were some Syrian complaints after the result came in. We'll get to that in a moment. But yeah, it was almost like they'd watered it down too much.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But anyway, I think it's Alsoma very good player. Yeah, he is. So he scored the penalty for Syria in the first leg. I was looking at his record for Al Hilal in Saudi Arabia.
He plays in Saudi, yeah. And I think it's like 70-odd goals in 70-odd games.
78 goals in 72 games, yeah. Which is, you know...
astounding.
This is a league which is better than the A-League.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, regularly these teams are making the semi-finals of the Asian Champions League. It's a good quality league. There's a lot of money in it. A lot of Brazilians, players that have made it in Europe.
Yeah.
So it's a good quality league. That's a very good record. This is a guy who just come back into the fold in the last... He came back in for the game against Iran, and he scored. So he's a very good goal scorer.
Extremely, and he took that goal really well. I mean, you could see that he knew what he was doing.
Clinical striker's finish. It was actually identical to Messi's finish in against Ecuador, his first goal. So Syria went 1-0 up. Australia equalised soon after through Timmy Cahill.
And then it did come from a moment of quality from, I think I mentioned before, my favourite player, Matthew Leckie.
So you're not being ironic when you say that?
Yeah, I am a little bit. I have been paying out on dear old Matt there for a while.
And
he's actually come good. In the last few games that I've been watching, the more I pay out on him, the better he plays. Well, I was paying out on him on against Thailand, and next of all, he pops up and scores a goal for us. And, you know, this game, I was ready to do it again. And
The game then after the equaliser went into extra time, and the guy I was paying out on delivered the cross for the second Tim Cahill header, which was Robbie Cruz. There's a man who is just constantly falling on the ground, looking agog.
Yeah. Look, I like Robbie. You can see that he's got a bit of quality about him, but you can also see that he doesn't really have more than 70 minutes in him as well. And he stayed on the pitch until the end.
A strange moment in the game when at the end of 90 minutes, it was 2-2 on aggregate. The referee came off with an injury. Not something you see every day. The fourth official then took over, looked very surprised to be in that position.
He looked very nervous, didn't he?
I thought he did a very good job considering.
He did. He looked like he was shitting himself, to be fair.
Although, in saying that, the Syrian fans don't agree.
Red card. A yellow card that turned out, when he looked at his notebook, turned out that it was a second yellow card. And it was like, oh, sorry, mate. You got to get a red card now. Off you go. And had he been reffing the game the entire game, maybe he wouldn't have given it. I don't know.
And it took that fellow about 5 minutes to walk off the pitch. And then Australia scored, and all of a sudden Syrian needed a goal.
Yeah, and then the Syrian players were able to jump off the pitch quite quickly, which was quite a moment to see.
But. Just today, I was looking at some of the FIFA pages on Facebook, and I found it quite amusing. All of these pages had hundreds of comments from people with Arabic-sounding names, and they all went something like this. We object to arbitration in the match between Syria and Australia, and refereeing errors in a change of referee and pitch changed the outcome of the match for Australia.
Were they referring to the first game or the second game?
Yeah, well, that's funny. They didn't actually mention anything about the penalty from the first leg. But we demand an investigation into the replacement of referee Rafshan Umatov and his departure at a difficult time in such an important match.
Well, they probably have something to complain about there. Yeah.
Well, they went on. We asked for an examination of the grassland that was not suitable for the Syrian team. While Australian players seem to be wearing shoes that cling to the long grass, so we saw Syrian players fall during the game while Australia's players are steady.
Yeah, no, I have to disagree with that comment, because Mark Milligan fell over in the first minute and Aaron Moy spent more time on the ground, I think, than he did walking around, which is very unlike Aaron Moy. Like, he's a very steady player, and yet he was constantly slipping over.
It was quite funny, actually, seeing on these FIFA pages, you know, someone had put them up to it.
Right.
But anyway, look, Australia went through.
To the next round, to the playoff.
They're not through to the World Cup. They will play.
Playoff from the fourth team in CONCACAF. And what a group this turned out to be. I mean, as I said last time, CONCACAF is designed to get America through. This is my honest feeling about this group. There's six teams in it. I know there's a bit of qualification before that, but, you know, it's largely teams that don't aren't going to trouble anybody around the world, right? Comes out of the six teams and 3.5 teams get through. And they're not of the highest quality
team. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think there's no difference between the African teams or the Asian teams as well. They're all fairly low quality when you compare them to Europe and South America. But anyway, this was...
But somehow, like this, I do think that it's designed so that it's virtually impossible for the US to fail. And going into the last round of games, you know, it looked like the United States had done enough with that win to put themselves back into the driving seat. They'd been struggling all throughout this campaign. It looked like they'd finally gotten themselves back in. Mm. They'd beaten Panama 4-0.
Well, that was in the first game. Yep.
Yes, that's right. And in this, and set them up for the final game where they're playing against Trinidad and Tobago, who
had won one match and lost every other match going into this.
Yeah, the bottom of the group. And they were the whipping boys.
Nothing to play for.
And, you know, Mexico had already qualified. Costa Rica had already qualified. And they were playing it out for the last qualification spot and the playoff spot.
Yeah, so, I mean, if all of them had won, if the United States, Panama and Honduras had all won their respective games, Honduras would have gone out.
Yeah, US would have gone through and third.
Yep. Panama would have made the playoff.
And would have been playing off against Australia.
So no one was really expecting Honduras to go through. They did win their game 3-2 against Mexico.
Yes.
And this was incredible. I had the three streams on, and Honduras were winning 3-2.
Yep.
At the time, Trinidad and Tobago were beating the US 2-1. And Panama and Costa Rica was 1-1. And so...
Yeah, yeah. I was watching this, like, just via, you know, pressing refresh on livescore.com. Right. Just keeping check every couple of minutes on how the game was progressing. And, you know, as it was, it's like, oh, you know, the US are losing. Oh, Mexico are losing. Oh, looks like we'll get the US in the playoff because they'll come forward.
Yeah, so at this stage, everything on Twitter was saying Australia will get the US, and that was like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's probably going to be harder, but it's also going to be very interesting. And I was posting on Twitter, if Panama can get a goal here, the US are out of the World Cup. If they get a goal, the US are out of the World Cup. Panama got a goal.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. The commentators on the commentators.
The Canaliums.
They were so emotional.
Yeah.
It was funny because in both the Honduras game and the Panama game, in the last minute, a very fat ran the pitch late.
Yeah.
And in the Panama game, it was a fat woman who ran onto the pitch. But, it was incredible. I was watching USA and you would expect, because they're the country with 300 million all the money behind the game. We've watched them qualify for the last, six World Cups in a row.
Yeah, 300 million people, half of whom are women. And the women's game, the women's national team in America have been doing quite well.
So
it's only really the 160 million males that haven't been doing so quite so well this year. Right? But yeah, you're right. I mean, they've had it easy since the early 90s when FIFA decided that the US had to qualify for every World Cup no matter what, and changed everything for them. But, you know, look, despite having one of the best young players in the world in Christian Pulisic, they've suffered from maybe having the rest of their good players are probably on the wrong side of the wrong end of their career at the fag end there.
With US soccer, there's been a lot of talk in the media since they've this spectacular failure. I think I would say though, when they were performing really well at those World Cups, they were overperforming. They would get to the World Cup. I mean, with their team on paper, they never had that many great players. So they had Landon Donovan. They didn't have world-class players. So Landon Donovan was a player who performed at the World Cup. But he didn't really make it big in Europe.
Yeah.
Like, whereas Australia had some world-class players, like in Harry Kewell, Tim Kaye would have been close, and Mark Viduka, you know? So what I mean is the US was getting to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. They were beating big names. But they just had this incredible team.
They had a very professional team, I think. They were a very good team. One of those teams, greater than the sum of the parts sort of thing, where they played very well together. Like I say, very good team spirit. But they just seemed to be a very, very professional team that knew how to get the best out of their team. And it was just one of those things that I thought, you know, this is a side of America where you see professionalism coming through in their approach to football.
Yeah.
Not spectacular. So they didn't have a world class player in there, but they had everybody on the team was, yeah, quite good. So they didn't look out of place.
Yeah, I mean, and they were scoring goals in the last minute a lot. You know, if you remember, I think it was Algeria where they scored that goal to get them to the second round.
After a certain stage, you have to say there's more than luck.
Oh no, I mean that's what I mean. They were on the big stage. They were performing.
That's right.
So what I'm saying is that perhaps it's about time that they didn't perform, and they haven't been performing throughout this whole campaign. Yeah. Klinsmann left. He wasn't doing well. The team wasn't playing well under him. Bruce Arena's come in.
I mean, Klinsmann had really left the US in a very bad state when Arena came in. And there's been a bit of debate about whether they should have gone back to Arena. But look, you know, I think in that situation you need a steady hand at the wheel. And he did come in and look.
They beat Panama 4-0.
Yeah. I mean, they came very close to qualifying.
Mm.
And somehow it all went wrong at the end of that.
I mean, to lose the Trinidad and Tobago team, which had won 1 and lost 8 in that group, nothing to play for.
Yeah.
They actually had put in some of their youth players, their young players in that game.
Yeah,
so
right.
They were giving youth a chance.
So they did have something to play for, I guess. You know, they were playing for the future. But I would like to just go back to Panama for a moment, because I want to acknowledge the teams that for whom this is their first World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
For Panama, it's the first World Cup. And I still remember extremely well Ireland's first World Cup in 1990. And although it wasn't Australia's first World Cup in 2006, I'm sure it felt like it because it had been more than a generation since the last one. The previous one had been in 1974. But the first World Cup is something special, and you could see it in the videos that were being shared on social media.
Check out our Twitter account to see a beautiful emotional reaction from some of the Panamanian commentators. At the final,
that's the beauty of international football. Qualifying for your World Cup.
We should mention though, Panama's first goal.
Oh yes.
Was not actually a goal. Check our Facebook page or just look it up on YouTube. The first goal against Costa Rica, the ball didn't even go...
Half goal over the line?
It didn't even touch the line. And then it sort of bobbles
around
off the post. And for some unknown reason, the referee is given a goal.
Was he Iranian by any chance?
So... Look, this has sort of been glossed over a bit in all of the...
Yeah, I honestly hadn't picked it up until you mentioned it earlier.
Stream. And I saw the second goal. Didn't see the first goal. It wasn't a goal. It was a phantom goal.
Worth checking that one out.
Although, they probably should have had a penalty because the guy was tripped. But check it out. The US don't seem to be complaining.
So the playoff then... So qualifying out of this now, like as we said, Mexico had already qualified. Costa Rica
had qualified. If that goal hadn't counted, Panama wouldn't have qualified. The US would have gone to the playoff.
Yeah.
So I would just stress that. But,
Panama.
So anyway...
Panama have qualified.
Panama have qualified automatically. Honduras now face Australia in the playoff.
In the Confederation playoff. And that's at the start of November. And we'll,
Yeah.
Okay. That's a two-legged affair. I think the way it works is, you know, team, the highest ranked team plays at home second. I think the highest ranked team is Australia, so the first game will be in TNT, and then the second game will be in Australia.
Yeah, I don't think too many Australian fans will be flying out to San Pedro Sula, the city with the highest murder rate in the world.
Did I say Trinidad and Tobago?
You might have.
But Honduras, of course, yeah.
But yeah, look, a very violent place. Anyone who is considering travelling, I hope you've got some good security.
Well, this is the country where ex Tottenham player Wilson Palacios lost his brother to kidnappers, basically, who had they kidnapped him because he had a wealthy brother and expected him to pay a ransom for him, and he ended up having to take obviously quite a he flew back home to Honduras to try and secure his release, and it didn't work out quite so well. But yeah. That playoff will be in.
Okay. Let's move on to the other confederation where it was really high drama. CONMEBOL, South America. What an incredible finish we had there too.
Just before we start, I just wanted to chase something up from the last one that I wasn't sure about. There are a couple of countries in South America that don't play in South America, turns out. I was wondering why is Suriname never in this group?
So no, they play in the
play in the CONCACAF, and they play in those earlier qualification games because Suriname, I think, is a Dutch colony ex-Dutch colony, and they've produced some fabulous players over the years.
So many, I mean, players like Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, Ruud Gullit, basically all of the black players of the Netherlands. Either they're born or their second or third generation Surinamese.
But yeah, that was just a question I had coming into this before, and I've answered it for myself. They play in CONCACAF. But yes, on to the main dish.
It was so close in CONMEBOL going into the final round of games. You had seven teams. Brazil had already qualified. Uruguay had
pretty much,
but they hadn't quite.
Yeah, 99.8% qualified.
Yeah, and then you had the next five teams, Argentina, Colombia, Peru, Chile, Paraguay, battling it out for two automatic places and one playoff place. Mm. So it meant that two were going to miss out. In the end...
And some like all of these teams, fantastic teams. Like you got Argentina, Messi...
And this is the thing, I said it on the last podcast, and I'll say it out, the hard confederation. I mean, for a team like Argentina to be struggling up to this point, you know, it's so competitive. All the teams in this group are extremely competitive. It seems like, I mean, Argentina had scored 15 goals in 15 games, so that's everyone is putting 10 men behind the ball against them, and they can play. They're not like...
I mean, I would say that probably 8 out of the 10 teams are very competitive, but then the other two teams play at altitude, and nobody can beat them at home because of the altitude advantage.
Venezuela didn't do so well this time around, but they have got a really good young team coming through, and they will improve for the next... Trust me, because they got to the final the Under-20 World Cup. That's another story. Basically... So we had 3-0 alls in match day 17. Bolivia, Brazil, Venezuela, Uruguay, Argentina, Peru. Again, Argentina couldn't score.
Chile. Absolutely fascinating. I mean, the statistic on this is for a year now, nobody has scored for Argentina except Lionel Messi.
And own goal.
Colombia
completely stuffed up at home to Paraguay and lost 2-1 due to two... mistakes by, what's the Arsenal goalkeeper?
Yeah, Ospina.
And Chile won, so it was all to play for.
Fabulous Chilean team. Like,
oh my God.
And they'd gotten themselves back up to third, I think it was, after this first.
Third or fourth, yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, fabulous Chile team. Like, at the last World Cup, they were my favourite team to watch.
And at the Confederations Cup, that... was just played recently. they were the best team.
Yeah.
Like, they should have beaten Germany's B team in that final.
Yeah.
But that's true. I think Sanchez is such a good player. I love watching him.
Mm.
But a great team. Great possession team. But
so attacking as well. Like,
yeah.
They're not sterile possession. You know, they're just really,
But I actually watched the Ecuador-Argentina game.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and I had the Peru-Colombia game on as well. But that was very interesting. It was a really high-tempo game.
Mm-hmm.
And Ecuador scored.
So just set it up for us, like coming into the last game. So after those, after that second last round, it was match day 18, down to the final thing. And there were so many permutations, though, of who could qualify. But basically, teams needed to win. I mean, that's what it was coming down to.
Yeah.
So
they all needed to win, but Chile were playing Brazil away. Okay. Yeah. Argentina were away to Ecuador, which is altitude, but it's a team that are out of it. Paraguay had the easiest fixture on paper, a home to Venezuela, but they were seventh. Everyone was expecting them to win.
Yeah.
Then you had the two teams who, going into it, I think they were fourth and fifth. Peru at home to Colombia.
Yeah. And Colombia had been doing superbly well, but then in the last couple of games had suddenly dropped off again.
Yeah.
And they seemed to have qualified, but then because of these, but this is the nature of CONMEBOL. You think you're on a good thing and then suddenly you're starting to lose games and you're dropping back down again.
So Uruguay are at home to Bolivia. Yep. That was a game they won 4-2. They were through.
Yeah.
Then I'll tell you about the Argentina game. I watched this game and it was a great match to watch. It was extremely high tempo and Ecuador scored after 30 seconds.
Yeah. So first minute.
And they play this... They're very pacey, they're forwards, and they play this sort of interchanging passing game going forward, and they just split Argentina apart. And the look on Messi's face, I just felt for him.
Mm.
But then...
This is an Argentinian team that, at this stage now, it's been a year since anyone scored for them, bar Messi. They've had 74 shots on goal and haven't scored. It's just a... For the world's... probably best attacking force.
The crazy thing is that they don't use them.
No, they haven't.
So they don't play Aguero. And, you know...
Aguero, Higuain has been dropped.
Yep. Like, they don't really, I think, play their best team. And it's actually past its peak now. Their peak was probably 3-4 years ago. Which is a real shame because... I think in defence and midfield, they're not as strong now any longer.
Yeah, they've
certainly
dropped off there. Yeah.
But anyway...
Di Maria is, you know, sort of seems to have dropped off quite badly now in the last couple of years.
Mm.
Yeah.
But look, it was a really great match. It was end-to-end stuff. And Messi equalised after 11 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And very similar goal to Al Soma, as we mentioned before, for Syria.
Yeah.
And then... It kept going. He got another one, and he finished it off in the second half with a beautiful lob. If you haven't seen it, go and check that hat trick. It was absolutely sublime and worthy of
podcast. We've retweeted it. Check it out. Lionel Messi.
So that basically meant Argentina were through. I was watching then Peru Colombia. It was 1-1, and. At home, which was incredible because Venezuela before this match had only won one match in the group. It was a bit like the USA situation.
Mm-hmm.
Paraguay at home, though, they needed to win. So from their perspective, it's terrible because they would have gone through if they'd won in place of Peru. Peru were in the playoff place. Colombia were in fourth. Argentina were in third. Paraguay needed to win. They couldn't do it. Chile... We're getting thrashed by Brazil 3-0, so Chile were out of it. In the end, Paraguay couldn't turn around. Peru, actually, the last few minutes of this game, I was watching it, they both knew that they were safe. And there's actually footage, if you check it out on @int Foot podcast.
Yeah.
We've put a little video where you can actually see Falcao doing that Guardiola thing where he puts his hand in front of his mouth and he's...
That's for the lip readers among us so that we can't understand what he's saying. Not that I speak Spanish, but...
But you you see him talking to the Peruvian defenders and it's quite clear that there's a bit of a conspiracy going on.
Absolutely.
And next thing you see is a Peruvian player approach his manager on the bench and the last
getting,
5 minutes
getting the nod. Yeah.
I was watching it. Peru are just passing the ball around the defence. Colombia happy to do the same. It was a la Republic of Ireland versus Netherlands 1990 Nike. World Cup yeah. where they both knew they were through and they decided not to try and score.
Yeah.
Of course, this wouldn't have worked for Peru if Paraguay had gotten 2 goals, but they were pretty sure it wasn't going to happen.
Well, yeah, and Paraguay were behind at this point, so, you know.
Yep. Yeah. So, the full-time whistle went. All the Peru, the Colombian players are cheering. Peru players are also cheering, jumping around. But then they all get out their minds and they're looking on the pitch, watching the Paraguay-Venezuela game, waiting for the final whistle to go. And then it goes and pandemonium ensues.
So, they've got a playoff. So, Argentina and Colombia have qualified... Peru got into the playoff position, so for a playoff against New Zealand.
Against New Zealand, where I'm close to 100% certain Peru will win that.
It would have to be one of the more certain results in football. But you know, football's a funny old game, and it can happen. But it's a two-legged affair.
I used to have a lot of faith in New Zealand, and I hope I haven't offended any New Zealanders by saying that, but. I was just checking this squad out and it's not looking very good, I don't think.
They've got some good players, they have, but you know the depth doesn't run
looking at the defense and midfield, there's a lot of players playing in sort of the lower tiers of the US leagues, and there was a guy I can't remember his full name, he was a Maori player playing in, he was at Marseille. And a young guy, and he was very promising for a while, but he's recently gone to the US, and it seems like he hasn't quite fulfilled his potential. Look, Peru are not Argentina, they're not a big name, but they've had a very good run over the last year.
And look, this was always the thing that we said as you know, like for Australia, that with this playoff against the fifth place South American team, that they come into this absolutely primed for it. They have just faced 10 other or 9 other amazing teams for over 18 matches. That's it. The CONMEBOL qualification takes 18. New Zealand have played the Solomon Islands, I think Fiji, you know, probably didn't even play Fiji. They have not had any preparation for a game where they suddenly have to step up again. So this is, apart from anything else, you know, like it's this difference in the preparation for this game that makes a huge amount of difference. The New Zealanders won't have faced anything like this for quite some time.
Yeah. And now look, they surprised everyone. They have surprised everyone in the past, like at the 2010 World Cup.
They were undefeated.
And I was their biggest fan. Watching them, I had a lot of faith in that team, but I think that team
Italy.
Italy, Slovakia, and Paraguay. So yeah. It was an amazing achievement.
It was,
really.
I mean, a lot of people, you know, have sort of slagged them off for that, but
I honestly think that was an amazing achievement.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand, as a small nation qualifying for the World Cup,
it's a sport that's not popular in.
In New Zealand, that's true.
At all,
So,
incredible achievement. But now,
good luck. That's all I'll say to our
good luck
friends.
Peru are playing very well.
Yeah.
And on paper, well, they're not. They don't have world class players. They've got a couple of decent. That Guerrero is one of the top scorers in the CONMEBOL group. So. I think they'll be a tough cookie.
Mm,
mm. Now, let's move on.
Where are we going to go to next?
Let's go to UEFA now.
UEFA. Have we done Africa? I think that'll be the only other one.
No, that'll be last. So
yeah.
We'll move on to Europe. Because there was a lot of really interesting situations here too. So
this
perhaps
is
okay.
The final two games of the group stages for all the groups.
Yeah, and a lot of the first place teams had already been decided.
Yeah. Basic structure is the first team coming first qualifies, the team coming second goes to a playoff. But there's nine groups, so one second team misses out. It's the eight best second place teams that go to a playoff.
So this was very interesting. Going into the games, there were three or four teams who were in danger of being that worst second place team.
Yeah. So maybe we'll just go through the qualifiers, the direct qualifiers, do you think? Quickly go through those. So Group A, what happened there? There was, going into that, there was...
So France, I don't think they had actually qualified. But going into the last two games, they still needed to win the last two games. But it ended up being France. They beat Bulgaria away 1-0.
Yeah.
And they, in their last game...
And this was the group that Sweden had that amazing result against Luxembourg. Luxembourg, who have been doing spectacularly well for Luxembourg.
Yeah.
And then who...
Luxembourg had drawn with France away. And then Sweden were in danger of finishing on the same points as the Netherlands and it going down to goal difference.
Inferior goal difference.
And they won their first game in this week, 8-0 against Luxembourg.
Yeah.
The Netherlands won 3-1 against Belarus. So it ended up being the final match in the Netherlands at home to Sweden.
Yeah.
Netherlands had to beat Sweden 7-0.
Seven clear goals.
Yeah, seven clear goals in order to
turn around that,
sneak into that second place position.
France won,
so they were through in first place.
Yeah.
And although they struggled, 2-1 at home to Belarus.
I mean, we'll come back to it a little bit later, but
I didn't see the match.
But
the main thing was Netherlands ended up beating Sweden 2-0. I saw the highlights of this. It was all Netherlands, but yeah, they were never going to get seven against that Swedish team.
No,
were they?
No. So, not this Dutch team, certainly. And after the qualification, or the not qualification from the Dutch team, Arjen Robben announced his retirement from international football, which was,
really? I didn't know that.
Into an era now from one of the game's great players, I have to say. I mean, that Chelsea team with Robben and Duff, you know, in those early 2000s, when Mourinho had those two players on the wing, that was a fantastic team.
And he really kept it going, didn't he?
Yes.
Right into his 30s. So
he
had this. I was watching him. I rewatched the highlights from the 2010 World Cup final the other day.
Yeah,
and it was, man, like, that was a close match. Like, I didn't realize how close it was, but I mean, the Netherlands had three or four great chances to score. And
he kind of reinvented the inverted winger, didn't he? I mean,
well, he has this gait when he runs where I think he might be double jointed in his hips or something, because he has this. It's a bit like the way Raheem Sterling runs as well. He has this. I think it really benefits his movement. You know, it's an incredible hip movement that he has.
Yeah. But he plays on the right in general, and he just has that move where he just then clean on left and just bangs the ball into the goal.
Yeah,
he's done that
many times. He scored an incredible goal in this game against Sweden. A long range, top corner, beautiful.
He got both goals in this game. Yeah,
he got a penalty. So anyway, that was Sweden.
Adieu to Arjen.
Not my favourite personality in football, but that's another story. Then we had Group B,
essentially the playoff between Portugal and Switzerland. So both of these teams had beaten the other teams all the way through the group. So coming into this, Switzerland were on 9 wins out of 9, and Portugal were on 8 wins out of 9, the only defeat being against Switzerland when Switzerland had beaten them at home earlier on in the qualification campaign. Like, a Switzerland team that is seen as journeyman, workmanlike, but they have risen up in the FIFA rankings. They're well into the top 10 in the FIFA rankings. Some are saying that they have kind of gamed the FIFA rankings as well, but they've also, they have done spectacularly well in this qualification campaign to also
They're a good team. It's the highest ELO ranking they've ever had, the current team. They're good. I watched extended highlights of this game and they got severely thrashed at this.
So, so into the playoff. It's the top two teams, and they're basically playing off. So Portugal are 3 points behind, the 3 points that they dropped against Switzerland, but they are going into it with a better goal difference. So they know that they win. If they win...
Yeah, 1-0 would have done them.
1-0, they qualify ahead of Switzerland because it goes on goal difference.
Honestly, it could have been 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Actually, Cristiano had a poor game, which... I haven't seen him have a poor game in a long time.
But, yeah, surprisingly he didn't score on this.
Well, yeah, because he ended up finishing behind Lewandowski in the top scorers list, which I'm sure his ego would have been going for that one. But he missed 2 or 3 one-on-ones with the keeper. So 2-0 it finished. Portugal are through. Switzerland to the playoffs.
Yep.
Group C was Germany and Northern Ireland's group.
Yeah. So another, just amazing qualification campaign from the Germans. Won every single game. 10 out of 10. In you go. Don't want to be in their group, do you?
So they were playing Northern Ireland away in the first match and saw the extended highlights of this. This game could have been 7 or 8.
Yeah. I mean, the Northern Irish team are obviously playing spectacularly well. But the only team that have actually troubled them is the Germans, but they've lost the 2 games against the Germans in the qualification campaign and played off the park, to be fair. But, 3-1.
Northern Ireland ended up then... So, the way the playoffs work, it's based on FIFA rankings. So they
they'd already qualified for the second spot.
They'd already qualified for the second spot. But in order to be seeded, they need to be...
How the seeding works based on the top... So there's 8 teams and the
top... So there's 8 teams, so the top 4 are seeded. So based on FIFA rankings.
Yeah.
So Northern Ireland, I think, going into this were ranked...
20th, I think. 21st.
But out of the teams that were likely to be second place teams, they were 5th or 6th. And basically, if they had won this match... there was a good chance that they would have gotten into that 4th place. They didn't. They lost to Norway 1-0.
Yeah, so they had to beat Norway and surprisingly lost because they've done really well in this entire qualification campaign.
Yeah. I mean, they're playing out of their skins as well. I mean, the team on paper, they shouldn't be playing this well.
No.
But Norway... could have had a couple more. They had 2 disallowed goals in that game as well. Northern Ireland had their chances. But anyway, it ended up 1-0.
Yep.
So Northern Ireland, though, were comfortable. They weren't ever in danger of losing out to be the worst second place team.
Yep.
Group D was...
our favourite group.
Our group.
So Group D. I mean, there were a lot of permutations and combinations coming into this. So coming into the second last game, we had Ireland had dropped points against Georgia, so that we had now dropped behind Wales. But we also knew that winning the last 2 games would get us through. So the last 2 games were against Moldova, the weakest team in the group, and then against Wales, our rivals for the second spot. But there was also a slim chance of us qualifying in top spot if Serbia had lost.
To Georgia.
To Georgia, So coming into the last game, because this was the interesting thing. Serbia had lost against Austria, and so it opened up the possibility of us, of Wales or Ireland finishing top of the group in the last game.
So Yeah, so Ireland were a point behind Wales going into the last game and had to play away to Wales, who were undefeated thus far. But
at home.
They were undefeated in the group. The whole
group. In the group. Hadn't lost a game.
They hadn't lost a game, no. So they were the only undefeated teams.
I hadn't even noticed that. Yeah.
So going into it, it was, you know, it was a real... Ireland had to really perform on the day.
Yeah, but they were also without their talisman, Gareth Bale. So Gareth Bale had gotten injured, and it had been 4 years since they had won a game when Gareth Bale hadn't played. Mm. Now, I mean, obviously he played most of those games.
But then they beat Georgia away 1-0, and they did it really comfortably. Like, they had a lot of chances compared to Ireland, who really struggled there and probably should have lost. So, like, going into this game, I thought Wales were looking a lot better than Ireland.
Yeah.
Both teams had players injured.
Yeah, well, we had Seamus Coleman, who, infamously.
Seamus Coleman.
He had his leg broken against Wales, if I recall correctly.
So, but Ireland were also missing Jonathan Walters and Shane Long. So it was a few crucial players out for Ireland.
Yeah. And then this is the thing. I mean, we're not obviously talking about world-class players, but we're talking about our top players.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with you know, our countries that aren't in the top 10. You know, you have a few very good players, or good players, and when you're missing them, it falls on somebody else to come in that maybe hasn't played at the top level, has a few international games under his belt, probably would never get an international game if he was, you know, in one of the top teams, wouldn't ever be, you know, troubling the French team or the Spanish team or the English team or whatever. But, you know, for teams like Ireland and Wales and Northern Ireland and Panama, I'm sure, and Australia, you know, we rely on these players who are...
And of course, Ireland, we're not guaranteed of, even if they got second in the group, of qualifying. They were towards the bottom of those second place teams. And a lot of it was depending on other results. So it was depending on Scotland, how well Scotland went.
Yeah.
In the end, it was Wales 0, Ireland 1.
Yeah. Early kickoff for us here in Australia.
It was. I got up. Yeah, I was watching, and
I have a thing about watching Ireland these days. I do find it hard, even in this. But going into this, I was actually very down on us. Like after that game against Georgia, we'd played so terribly, and then even against Moldova, where we won 2-0, and you know, it was pretty convincing 2-0 win. But you know, it was Moldova, or the worst team in the group, and it should have been more convincing. But you know, look, it was the 3 points that mattered more than the goal difference at that stage.
We started this game so awfully bad. It was worse than the worst of the Trapattoni days. Like in the first 30 minutes, I think I saw a funny someone tweeted, Ireland have only made 7 passes and they've already circumnavigated the globes like 10 times, something like that, because it was just awful long balls. Wales just had the ball, but they weren't penetrating at all. So Ireland were keeping them at bay, defending really deep. And
this is, you know, Martin O'Neill has set up his team to defend well, like, you know, like he has done that. Then Wales had an injury though to Joe Ledley, who was sitting behind
Joe Allen,
who was sitting behind the midfield and sort of directing things.
Well, he was passing a lot. The game changed noticeably straight away. Ireland started getting the ball a little bit. I think after 45 minutes of that, of Wales sort of passing the ball around and not doing anything with it, and Ireland conserving their energy, they were ready for a couple of quick bursts, and it came early in the second half.
I mean, they had played away against Georgia. We played at home to Moldova. So coming into it, there was a bit of it. And I have to say that... So I've been following it. I've been in bed, not really, not watching it, just following it on, you know, various updates like LiveScore and Twitter and stuff, and I thought, all right, I bet I've got to get up, so I'm taking credit for this. The 57th minute, I think it was, when Jeff Hendrick, basically I turned on the telly, Jeff Hendrick gets the ball, makes a break down the right, crosses it over, and I'm just wondering, where is it going? I think you texted me a couple of minutes beforehand saying, what the fuck does James McLean do for us?
It was funny. I think you getting up and watching him was what made it go in, because he wouldn't have scored otherwise, because he really is a really, really dreadful player. But yeah, it went in. Look, he's got energy. He's got, you know, he runs after the ball, but
there's a good article on him by Miguel Delaney, our good friend who's the journalist, the Irish-Spanish journalist in the UK, talking about the things that James McLean brings to the game. But yeah, it was a great finish. And I have to say that
it came off. He got
after
lucky.
That, what did Wales offer?
But yeah, Wales didn't even look like scoring. So Ireland did a job on them.
Yeah, and so another away win. So, you know.
And so what it meant was Ireland got the 3 points, and they were not one of the worst. They were not the worst second place team. So Scotland had stuffed up by, although, well, we'll get to that group in a moment.
Group E, yeah. Poland had qualified in first place in this.
So Group E, Poland had already qualified. Oh no, they qualified in the last game, yeah. But the thing with that group was the second place team. Denmark were looking strong because they beat Montenegro away in their first match, which I predicted on the last podcast. They ended up drawing at home, a late goal for Romania, but it didn't matter. They managed to hold on to second place. And to qualify, it's one of the best second place teams.
Yeah. Another team with one superb player who has been
world class, Eriksen.
Who has been just playing out of his skin.
He made a difference against Montenegro, and he scored.
He was, and he was a difference. And he scored against Romania. Penalty against, but he scored so many goals from now. And yeah, every country needs a player like that if they want to sort of outperform, I think.
Yeah. You know. So then we had Group F. England qualified in their first match. They beat Slovenia 1-0. It was a last-minute goal by, again, the world-class player Harry Kane. And that's a perfect example of what you were just talking about, where you've got one world-class player.
Yeah, you've got a journeyman country, basically, of journeyman players, and one player who...
I do not condone this kind of behaviour. Just say that.
One player who's playing in the form of his life, at the moment, and just a fantastic player. He's just focused on being better and better. Gets the goal, the winner, the last few games.
What was great was that Scotland did us a favour again. They always seem to be doing us favours.
They did the last qualification,
So they needed to beat Slovakia at home, which they did.
So they took the points off Slovakia.
Yeah.
So Slovakia are now...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they needed to beat Slovenia away.
Which they failed to do.
Which they didn't. If they had, Ireland would be out now.
Yeah.
So,
you're right. It was actually Scotland. Yeah.
So no second place team qualified through yet. Painful feeling. I don't envy that. I mean,
no.
I actually think that's a really bad system. If you come second, you expect to qualify at least to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's who are the other teams in your group, and you do want to feel
look, it
group.
Was probably the easiest group.
Yeah, it was.
Or maybe the Spain-Italy one. That was a really easy group after those
two. Yeah, but you did have Spain and Italy in it. So, easy for them, but at the same time.
Which, speaking of which, anyway, Spain qualified automatically.
Yeah.
Another two wins at the end for Spain over Albania and Israel. Italy slipped up at home to Macedonia in the first match, but they beat Albania away.
Yeah,
in the second, so it was
never really in doubt. I mean, the Italians are always good,
but they're into the playoffs now, and they could get Ireland. So they're a seeded playoff team. We'll come to the seedings in a moment. We'll just get through these groups. Group H, Belgium had already qualified.
Everybody's dark horse, I think.
They're a light horse now, surely, with that squad. They've probably got the best. One of the best teams on paper.
I know. Yeah, I mean, but we'll come to this later about, you know, who we think is going to win, but, you know...
so, anyway, they beat Bosnia away 4-3 in the first game, which stuffed up Bosnia's chances of qualifying. Greece ended up getting through...
Classic Belgium result, 4-3.
Yep.
Harking
86
back to the
World Cup.
Yeah.
Soviet Union.
Possibly the greatest World Cup game.
What about France and Brazil?
France and Brazil, yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, you had Greece in second place there. Belgium topped the group. And then the final group was the best, the most magical, perhaps.
Ah, yes.
Speaking
of
what a fairy tale.
Time qualifiers. We mentioned Panama before. And here's another one.
Iceland.
Smallest country to ever, population-wise, to ever qualify.
Yeah, 350,000 people. I saw some statistic that 0.1% of all men aged between 20 and 34. Although I think that's actually it would actually be more than that.
It's actually one in a thousand.
Yeah, so it must be more than that.
So half the population, 175,000. What percentage of that population is
between
that age?
20 and 34? Look, anyway.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Look, it's
amazing. Of the population, the eligible population plays in this team.
Yeah. So it's just incredible. I mean, you're talking about a country which has the population of Canberra, basically, which has qualified for
Cork.
The World Cup. Cork. So they beat Kosovo 2-0 at home.
Geelong.
But the most amazing thing, and I watched the highlights
Geelong.
Of this, Iceland beat Turkey away
3-0. Yeah. I know, I was a bit worried. I honestly was a bit worried about Iceland. I really obviously wanted Iceland to qualify out of this group. Coming into the last couple of games, they had to go away to Turkey. I thought,
they lost to Finland.
Yeah,
they hadn't done that, it would have been a, you know. But they had lost to Finland when no one expected them to lose to Finland.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then they needed a result against Turkey.
Yeah.
And I watched this game.
Yeah.
They could have won this 6-0 or 7-0.
Yeah.
They absolutely tactically. I was reading recently about these stories of these, hundreds of years ago of these Turkish slave traders, and they would travel up the Atlantic coast, and they actually raided these like Icelandic towns and took them back to North Africa. And
really,
yeah, it's these incredible stories that I was thinking of this as these. 11 intrepid blondies sort of walked out onto the pitch in Istanbul with, 80,000 screaming maniacs.
Yeah.
I was just like, these poor guys.
Yeah.
And then they ended up totally killing
it. They were victorious.
Yeah. The Vikings.
And the, with the Viking clap.
So.
Is there anything better in football? There just isn't really, is there?
Imagine being Icelandic. It would just be...
I am Icelandic. I don't know what you're talking about. It's my adopted football home.
So then it just left the second place in this group. Going into the last game, it was Ukraine at home to Croatia. This second place team were also in danger of missing out if it had been a draw.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up being Croatia winning away from home when they had to. away to Ukraine.
Yeah.
Great result for them.
Yeah. I mean, Yarmolenko has been in great form, the Ukrainian player. And Croatia seemed to be in sort of in different form. I think, were they favourites were they top seed in this group going into it?
Croatia?
Yeah. And then, so they've kind of...
really had a few bad results just recently.
Yeah.
In particular.
Yeah.
Like they lost to Iceland and stuff.
Yeah.
And, but they turned it on when they need to. Ukraine are out. Mm. Croatia will be a seeded team in the playoffs. So
let's, the eight playoff teams then...
And we'll just look at those playoff teams. So basically you have... So the seeded teams will be Switzerland, Italy, Denmark and Croatia.
Yep.
Which, funnily enough, where
the order that they finished
in terms of points. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the unseeded teams would be Sweden, Northern Ireland, Greece and Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
And
this is based on FIFA rankings.
Yeah.
And it's, I double checked this, it's FIFA that makes this rule, not UEFA. So FIFA are the ones who govern the qualifying structure of these things. And they've obviously got to find a use for the FIFA rankings, and they use it as much as possible. So,
yeah. In fact, I think Denmark would have been lower had it been done on the UEFA coefficient, they use in UEFA, because they did poorly in previous groups. So,
yeah,
they would have missed out, I think. But that's how it is.
That's how it is.
So
the draw hasn't been made. It'll be made shortly, and
next week. Yep.
Home and away. Top seed plays against the bottom seed.
It's going to be so tough.
Top seed plays home game.
It feels like after Ireland's victory away to Wales that
we now have
already done it, but now we have to do it all again. Yeah. It just goes to show how ridiculous European qualifying is and how hard it is.
Yeah.
And you know.
You got your five countries there, but
it's not about number of countries. Just on pure difficulty.
I'm just saying, you got 55 countries, and then you got 25 of them would be very competitive in any other qualification structure. Yeah, the fact that you have to finish top of the group, and the groups are all seeded, and so the top seed in every group is a fantastic team, and so to even dream of coming first in one of these groups for one of the teams that aren't the top seed is an amazing result.
Yep. Basically, now we just have Africa left.
There's still another... they haven't finished the qualification phase at this point.
No.
So there are still some
There's still one more game left. But we've for certain got...
Quite a few of the groups have been sorted out now, though.
Well, I think we've got two. They've been decided.
Yeah.
So the first one is Nigeria. They were clearly... So they're 6 points clear. They can't be caught and fully deserved there, really. So they beat Zambia.
Mm.
Their closest rival.
So they did have Cameroon in their group, but Cameroon...
Oh, it was a group of death.
Yeah.
But they've romped it in.
Yeah.
But the other team that's qualified is Egypt, who... You know, I haven't been... Probably they've been the most successful African Nations Cup team, but they haven't qualified for a World Cup since 1990 when they were an islands group in that group of death in Italy.
That was our first qualification.
Yeah.
So it's been 28 years since Egypt have...
Mohamed Salah has been doing extremely well. He scored all of their last four goals. Five of the last six, so he's just romping it in. They won. Now,
the commentary from this game, if watch the footage if you can, it's pretty incredible. It's just Allahu Akbar to infinity when Egypt scored their first goal.
So who were they playing against?
They were playing against Congo, Republic of Congo. But then it was quite amusing, actually, because the entire stadium seemed to think Egypt was going through, and then Congo scored in the 88th minute. But then in the
To equalise.
Yeah. And then in the 95th minute, Egypt got a very, very dubious penalty.
Mm.
It was never a penalty. It was a bit like the Syria one against Australia.
Mm.
And anyway, the stadium erupted again, and the emotions on display were, you know, really intense. A bit like
the whole,
a bit like the Panama one. Yeah, and obviously.
But it just shows just how much qualifying for the World Cup means.
Yeah.
All around the world, it doesn't matter. You're in Europe, you're in Central America, you're in North Africa. It doesn't matter where you are. Qualifying for the World Cup is...
I felt a little bit sorry for Uganda because I thought that was a bit dubious. And they've sort of been done a raw deal there. They would have had a chance to go on and win the group. But anyway, so the three remaining groups are... Group A, where you basically have Tunisia, who haven't officially qualified, but
they're 3 points ahead.
They have Libya at home.
Yeah.
They would have to lose that. It's a derby match, but they beat them away, so you'd expect them to win that.
Yeah.
And if they do slip up, DR Congo are there to take advantage of it.
Yeah, good young team, DR Congo.
Again, I'd like to see them go through. They're a really exciting attacking team as well.
Yeah.
But
for all intents and purposes, though, they are pretty much eliminated. It's going to take one extraordinary result and then for them to.
Yeah. Group C is still pretty close going into the last game. Morocco haven't conceded a goal in 5 matches, which is pretty incredible. Now, they've got 9 points, and Ivory Coast have 8 points. And going into that last game, they're away to Ivory Coast.
Two of the big African nations, I mean, Cote d'Ivoire has been one of the powerhouses in Africa for quite some time.
Yeah.
Maybe on the wane a little bit.
Man. Yeah, and look, I always go for the underdog in their situation, so Morocco haven't been to a World Cup for quite a while.
No, but I recall them from, you know...
Yeah, they used to be.
Fantastic teams.
Ivory Coast would have to do something that hasn't been done in the group yet and score a goal against Morocco. Which you'd probably, you'd expect them to go through. But it's going to be very interesting going into the last game. Mali are out and so are Gabon. So then we've got Group D. Now Group D is still wide open. You have that Senegal versus South Africa game that needs to be replayed.
Yeah, South Africa had a good win.
They beat Burkina Faso at home.
Yeah,
3-1.
And they hadn't. I mean, the Senegal game aside, they hadn't won a game. Yeah, I think they had a draw.
Yeah,
going into this, but that was a decent win for them.
So Senegal beat Cape Verde 2-0 away. So at the moment, Senegal are on top, and they have a game in hand. I mean, it's looking pretty good for them.
Yeah, although their main man Sadio Mane.
Oh, he's got injured, hasn't he?
Yeah, so
that is a big... They have to go to South Africa first, and then that's a lot of flying they've got to do 4 days later, home to South Africa. So...
All right. Yeah,
we'll see. You'd have to say Senegal are favourites there, but, I mean, Burkina Faso and Cape Verde are also still within a shout there.
Yeah, but pretty much Senegal need a point, right? I mean... Burkina Faso or it has to be them. They'd have to win. And then Senegal would pretty much need to lose both games against South Africa.
Yeah, we fancy Senegal there. Well, that's pretty much it. That's a wrap up. All right, it's getting pretty late here, so we're going to wrap it up. Till next time, over and out.